Mr. Donnelly, Reel 4. The next thing really is when you moved up towards the desert, towards the Gazala lines, mm-hmm. and what was to become the Battle of Knightsbridge for you, which would mean you moved probably up in about early May or sometime around there. We're not quite sure. How did you first hear of the news of the move up, and how did you feel?
Well, I felt quite excited to go up to the Brew. You know, obviously, if you go up to the Brew, and I'd never been up there before. But we went up by road, on the transporters.
And what were the transporters like?
The sheep and lorries, the transporter.
So, one each?
So no, I'm not talking about the tank, you know,
right.
I'm talking about the transport for the echelons and whatnot, you know. So we went up and it took us some time to get up there, because they're going through, as I say, they go through all these ways up, Bardia, and I forget most of the names there.
It's all right.
And saw them pass and all the way up to near the brook. Didn't go into the brook. We went off to the left, to the west, and went to Knightsbridge.
What was your first impression of the desert? Because you'd been in the desert, but I mean it's a desert as far as
I was. It was vast and barren. But I've said that all, and I keep saying it, it's an ideal battleground because it was only you and the enemy, there were no civilians involved or anything else, no buildings or anything. It was just you and them.
And what about the desert conditions? Were you getting used to them?
Well, I thought, there were some places, sand, you know, but a lot of it was hardened sand, you know. And I went up there, got a heavy rain, and we were stuck, you know. And about 2.5 hours afterwards, it was going dry again. You know, the sun dried up quickly, and then we were away again. But when it came to it, everything was stopped, the plants, the vehicles, and everything. 4 mile drives and all couldn't get up the sun. Heavy rain. You get many of these, what they call them,
sandstorms.
You see it coming. You just go and it says your tongue is shut down and where it passed. Just a wind, you know, and you see it dark with the sun, of course, it passes the answer. You don't know how it comes.
And you were moving up to Knightsbridge, mm-hmm. and can you take us, because the battle wasn't very long for you, can you tell us exactly what happened as far as you were concerned?
As far as we're concerned, we were told when we got there, we were informed that the Germans were in a minefield, a mine box, and couldn't get out. And the A squadron would go in the morning and attack them. Now, A squadron went in, and we just listened to them, the front, the guns go there, we see smoke going up, B squad is no hard button them until we got told that B squad in. A squad had a deal with this. Don't go around them, just go over the top. And then worry and engage the enemy. And I said, not kidding, sir. We went up, said, you're going up the town, you're going up the hill. All your gunner can see the sky. And then you have to hold your gun down. And go up over the top of the ridge and over the top. And then you bring your gun up again. And then I was in a jail again, going up to it. Now, I had to dive in the corner of a kill. Only thing I can remember was the tank one that pulled me out and I thought my head was blown on and blood coming in my mouth. So he hauled me out and he said, there's fuel set at the back of the tank. He said, but stay where you are, we'll get a machine gun.
Now, just going back briefly, what was it actually like when the shell hit the tank? What was it like in the tank as far as you...
It was a barn, yes. That flash, that was all. I mean, I didn't know. That was nothing. As I say, we were still, well, it's just coming down.
And you were on the gun and you couldn't...
The gun was up there. And that was in a jet. No, you said German yet. So...
Let's see. The commander just grabbed you by your webbing, as you described.
And we lay at the back of the tank, we were getting a machine gun, and we managed to crawl back over the top, and we went down to our escalator in the valley, you see, we went down to the escalator, And
that's the B echelon, or the A echelon.
A echelon. And we got down there, and a few more lads came across, and we lost a lot. And another one, one of us got and came back.
Did you see anything of what was happening? I mean, when you were crawling around the back of the tank and the rest of it, did you see what was happening ahead of you, or was it just a mystery to you?
Yeah, they just kept your head down. You couldn't move. It was sitting down and out down. And we sat with this way there. And that tank was way busted, of course, it was in fire. So we got crawling back, and there were an awful lot of lads there. Survivors, an awful lot lost, mind you. So we got told them to get on their vehicles, based on vehicles, and head for Tobruk. So they did this, but on the way to Tobruk, we were told to halt. There was a regiment coming up with light honeys, and apparently the strangers that hadn't been in before, and we were to take them over, and they were to go to Tobruk. So we took over the light honeys, and the men went to Tobruk, and of course Tobruk surrendered. Just shortly after that, I'm glad we didn't land up the boat. So all we did there was went round the back of the area with these light tanks and shot the short transport. I mean, I'm using ourselves, we went to call the group.
Now, that was on the way back, or?
We went back to Lalamine.
Can you tell us a bit about the jock column, the raids you did?
Yeah. Well, what we did was we used to go up behind the desert and come round the back of the German armour and shoot up the soft, you know, the supplies that were coming up. And they did this for days, but then Germany's not done. Next year, as soon as it's after a while, they sent a tank for the, and we had loads, had a chance against a Mark IV, against with these V-light tanks. But we still made a news to ourselves and come back here and kept doing this all the way back to Lalamine. Then we got,
Now, hang on a minute. What about the honey tanks? What did you think of them? Can you give us a bit of a description, like you did for the thing, give us a description of them? I don't think you had them long, did you?
No, they were small tanks. They were only, tuna turret and a driver. They were very, very small and very fast, of course. And there was only about 37 millimetres in it, and that thing at the top, you know, like a 2-pounder.
And what was your job in the tank? Were you a gunner? So there'd be the gunner. Would you be a gunner operator in that one, but doing all the job? Not, you know.
No, I think it was just the commander did all the operating.
And there'd be a driver?
Only the driver, yes.
And what about armour? I get the impression there wasn't much of.
They were very thin, easy for the weight. But I mean, they were meant for reconnaissance rather than just for attacking, you know.
Do you remember any specific incidents from the jock columns, the attacks, or?
You know, it's just in and out again, you know, quick and cut with create enough of damage, you know, you're better than whatever you've seen going up. I remember seeing one attack we went into, and we caught the convoy on the hop, and I think we'll never forget, we went through the column. And there was one German here, and he must have been, you think, a bit of red paint. He would have been in the back of the pit, wasn't he? And I think it would have been a mess if he shot the boy, you know, because he was, well, the end was that he died that night, but we couldn't take the boy. I'll never forget that boy. His tummy was shivering, and he was being dipped in red paint, of course, he'd been a bit of a man.
Did you feel sorry for him? I mean.
I think. They see a boy in that state, you know. And they were just sitting in the back of petrol, taking the supply up. And we used to shut it up, and of course, they went, well, what? He managed to jump out the back, but he was, I mean, they didn't wear much clothes in the desert, but he was dread from top to bottom. It's kind of.
Now, what about when you met the Mark IV tank? Do you remember? Or was that not your group that met the Mark IVs? You know, when they started putting them with the convoys.
And you what?
When the Germans started to put tanks with
No, we seen them, and we used to wait until Shastin. He travelled up in front of it, and we would go round the back. And then you couldn't go, once he started firing, he would come down again. So it was just about shooting them up, and we again, as quick as you could go.
And were you just, how many Hunnies would be in the attack?
Maybe two troops, eight tanks.
And would you have any infantry with you in lorries, or was it just... Anything else about that period?
Well, one thing I'll never forget, we came back towards El Alamein, and there were a big dump, Nafi dump, and they were ready to blow up. So we went across to see this Nafi man and said, can we not help us? No, I've got to blow up. So, we got back to El Alamein, and we were given 3 days leave in Cairo. We came back and got these new tanks, as you say, they were chairmen's.
Now, so where were you at El Alamein?
Down at Qatar Depression, right down in the south.
And where did you actually pick the tanks up? In the Qatar, the Shermans?
They picked them up, they down to there, and brought them up to there. And,
so you're on the El Alamein front, and they brought them up to you, yeah. And took the Hunnies away, I suppose. Yeah. Now, what were the Sherman's an important tank, it's a main battle tank. Can you go through what the Sherman was like?
Sherman was a 5-man tank again, driver, co-driver, operator, gunner, and commander. And we had better ones to start with. Later on, we got diesel, the Russell we got. And they had the track, and rubber pads on the track. First time we saw rubber pads on the sort of metal. But I thought they were very good. The only thing was they were very high. I mean, they were a target. You would have them as compared to the tanks we got later on. But at that time, it was the best time.
What about the gun?
The gun itself?
Because it was a lot better than the 37, wasn't it?
Yeah, far better. And the best time we had, out in the desert. And I would say that we owe the Americans a heck of a lot, because without them, we didn't have an effort against the Mark 4s.
So you rated them as up there with the Mark 4?
Yeah, with the Mark 4. That could go with an 88mm, of course. After they won the tip of the war,
Now, what about the armour of the Sherman?
The armour was quite thick. It was as good as anywhere before, and better, I think, than anywhere before.
And lastly, were you aware that they caught fire straight away, or was that something you found out, or did you never really find that out? Because they had a reputation for catching fire easily, the Sherman. Were you aware of it?
No, we of course, mind you, we were never looked at or anything. I was never looked at.
But it was not something you knew about?
No.
Because they were called Ronsons and things like that, but no, that's not something that
no.
bothered you or no. you knew about?
The only thing that bothered us was the height of them, that was it.
That was because you'd show up
yeah.
more, and you couldn't get hold down to
it. Target from the enemy, yeah. Especially if it means that I've dug in, you know, they could put one by target in the big thing.
Now, what was your role in the crew again? It sounds, from what you said, that the layout of the Lee and the Sherman in the turret wasn't that much different, just a bigger gun.
It's very similar. I sat on the left-hand side, the operator sat on the right-hand side, the car, and the operator, and then the driver and co-driver different.
And it was the same radio, I think,
same
from
radio.
19 set. Yeah. So all that we said about the radio in the Sherman, in the Lee, applies to the Sherman.
Yeah. The only thing with the Sherman was, unfortunately, the driver and the co-driver had hatches to lift it up to get out if anything happened. They didn't come up with it. But if your damp gun was fired over the top of the gunner, the driver, he couldn't get out, he couldn't lift his hatch. We had to go crawl across the other side to get out, or vice versa. So that was the only scenario.
Did they have that? They used to have
a dropout.
A dropout thing.
We never used them.
Why not?
They never used them.
So if there was an alarm, did you practice getting out of the tank quickly?
Never. No. Never practiced getting out. There were never any jail for that at all. Of course, you never get out. If you're going into hurry, you get out quick, when you without any jail for it, you know. There were never any jail for getting out quick.
And what about your new crew? This is what you had started telling me about this sergeant. Now, tell me about that. What was his name, if you remember?
Conte Harland.
Harland.
Harland. Conte Harland. And he got the DCM, and then he was a troop attack commander first. And he went through from there through the desert. After the war, he flew some Tunis. After the Tunis finished, I think they were meant to come over, I'm not sure, but they were whipped across to Salerno, and they landed with General White Clark, Zanni.
Hang on. So this, you stayed with Harland all this time.
Yeah.
What was his first name? Obviously not Conky.
Tommy.
Tommy. And what was Tommy Harland like?
Very good indeed. A good tank commander, and a good troop commander. Got his commission in the field.
And this is the one you're still in touch with now, is it?
Yeah.
And what about the rest of your crew? So you were the gunner,
yeah,
and you could have acted as wireless operator, but
yeah,
you were a gunner.
Yeah.
So who was your wireless operator, do you remember?
I can't remember. I've seen that many times too.
So the rest of the crew, you don't know the names so well?
No. It changes so often. You've got injuries. I remember at El Alamein, we had a little lap gunner. I mean, we call lap gunner, it's a spear diver, you know.
Hang on, no, because I'll come on to that. Yeah. So, you had a chance, but you got on well with your crew.
Yes, very good crew.
And I should have asked perhaps before, who were your officers? Do you remember any particular officers from your time?
Yes, Van Boyles.
And what were they like, you know?
They were East Africans, Captain Sproul. And he was a classical boy. And one day I was a classical Claudia. That's a young man. So I went across the border of the Swats. His gunner's poof. I said, "Is he gunner?" And I said, okay, so can I give you his poof? So he says, "I was trying to grow my stash gun."
Was he a troop commander?
No, he was second commander of the squadron.
What were the rest of the officers? Any other officers are big characters, or what did you think of them? Were they good officers? Like, you didn't like some of the officers, the Gloucesters, ours?
Never complained against any of the officers in the first long time. Never.
They were a good bunch.
Very good bunch.
So they treated you well, yeah, and they were competent,
yeah,
and they were brave.
They were very, very competent. You know, of course, me just said they'd been in action for years, you know, from the start of the war there. But they were very, very good indeed. And the tank crews were good. There were some Scotsmen among them, as I say, Englishmen. And all our cooks were jobbies. And I thought the Scotsmen were bad, but when you got six of them together, I couldn't make it a word they were saying. I couldn't. And they would give you anything. They would. We got on well. As I say, they did most of the recruiting.
Were most of them regulars?
Most of them recruited in the South of England. So yeah, they recruited you. The recruitment for the tap regiment, it was the football tap regiment, and the Scottish one. But they were people from all over the South of England, and they were all.
And they were regulars, most of them. Were they still regulars by then, or had they got a lot of time, you know?
They were still regulars, because I remember poor Alan, they were the one lad to get promoted. And they did it very strict. They took the attempt, they made them a promotion with the 10-year journey. Not with capabilities. The one lad joined in the morning, and then I joined the afternoon, the couple would make a sergeant. Because he joined me 6 years later.
And what about your position as a Scotsman in an English unit? I mean, did you feel out of place, or did they make you feel out of place?
No, at all, no. It was always, my name was John, and I've always got John, but if your name was Paddy, I think you would still be called John if you're a Scotsman. How did you get that job? My name was John, so I got John.
So there was no resentment, no problems?
No.
You said there are some other Scots in the unit, you know, a few. Did you stick together, or would you just have friends any old now?
Scots were scattered, but they were in different troops. We worked more or less as a troop, four tanks. We had one man in there, he was killed very, very miserably. He was going up the road, quite no action at all, and the gun out the back, Mr. Forrest, the police with it, and the trigger of the guns, and the head of Akers tried to kill him. DCMM, the one that was all mixed well, and the front crew had been broken up when they were sent out to the other lads. They kept in this one, but there was something else we needed in there.
So you didn't, the Scotsmen didn't all stick together. It was not, there's no cliqueism.
No.
It was a friendly, open...
If you were a gunner, you were not a Scotsman, you were a gunner, that was it.
And what the NCOs? I mean, you mentioned one, Tommy Harland. But what about the others? How do you?
Well, with them, as I say, with two corporals. One was called Buster Earl, which now was called Tommy Moat, and they were regulars and very good lads.
Were they strict? Because there's this thing about regular discipline, that you know.
No, I mean, an attack from you, Wallace. I found it. As I say, I went. The world of Conky, and it was Conky who got all the time, and he was a tenant. And he came to me just before the war finished, but we were going to take his team. So I was his troop sergeant at that time. He said, Doc, you know, when we get into Berlin, he says, remember, you have to be a tenant. I said, Tommy, I said, no, it's secret. I mean, I know the ropes. I said, I wouldn't be quite Conky a friend of Scott, neither anything out of that.
So it was informal. So when he was an NCO, you'd call it, would you call him Conky to his face?
No, I still get Conky yet from everybody. Yeah.
Now, what about? So you'd moved it. You'd got your new tanks in the Katara Depression. Was there any? I mean, presumably there'd be infantry units as well preparing defence lines.
Because
I know we attacked from El Alamein, but at first it was a defence line, wasn't it?
Yeah. And the Germans happened to attack on our front at Katara Depression.
That's so right, yeah, sorry.
They pushed through to get to Alexandria, and we were dug in. And we
now, can you tell me, before we go into the German attack, how did you dig your tank in? I mean, because it's...
You get a little ridge, a sand ridge, you know, it's made of the height of that thing. The slope, right, you know. Well, you dug it. The width of your tank in, so only the gun was shown on the top, plus the tank commander, and the gun is telescope, like, you know. And you were actually going dug in, and it was put a sun in front of you.
So you'd be hull down?
Hull down, yeah.
So you prepared these positions. Your tanks were along a ridge. Now, where were the infantry? Dug in, hull down. Where the?
It would be behind us, and it would be in France at all.
So you'd be in front of the infantry?
Yeah.
What about barbed wire and minefields?
Well, we didn't see it at that time. We didn't have time, because the time we got back, we just went down to this position. We thought we were down towards the Katara Depression. And then the three French were on our, I think, more or less, in the depression. So, when the Germans attacked...
Now, would this be the first Battle of El Alamein, the German attack? Then?
Yes. So they built through the tank at Alexandria.
Now, what do you remember of that battle, as far as you were concerned?
Well, we slaughtered them, and another who we knocked enough of our tanks out. They were sitting ducks. I mean, the same as we got our tanks, which, well, instead of saying more as they did it to us, they didn't. That was as far as they went. It was stopped.
Now, so what would you see as the Germans? What could you see from your tank dug in as the German attack?
They weren't even facing us. We're going. Well, that's their side, yeah. And then we just shot them up. They lost some of the tank. We just scraped that out and held down. They lost a lot of tanks.
And did you were acting on the guns. How would you go about training the gun to follow a tank? Because I presume you'd have to shoot ahead of them if they were moving across you.
Right.
Was it difficult, in other words, to hit it? I mean, what range were...
Further away they are, I mean, the easier it is because they're not going that very fast from the right away, you know, and there's a big. And what we used to do, we tend to do, is to shoot at the tracks first.
So you could hit accurately enough to pick out the tracks, not just aiming at the tank. You were aiming at the...
Well, it depends on your first shot. If your shot hit the turret, you'd bring it down to hit the track. Because some of these tanks were, especially in Mark 4, they were like, we think we had this is pushing off. So we told it.
Even with a 75mm?
No. You see, when we had the 2-pounders, they were hitting the Mark 4s. They're bouncing off, and we're going to hit the tracks, and it brings them to a halt, and they can't even move.
Now, I better check. When you were hull down on the ridge, had you got your Shermans by then?
Yeah.
Right. So, would the 75mm, would that be worth hitting it? I mean, would that go, that penetrate a Mark IV's turret or not?
Well, it might have done it all right.
But you still went for the tracks, because you got into the...
Yes, sir.
You realised that was the best way
of it? Yeah.
So you'd hit them in the tracks.
Yeah.
That would
stop them, and then you just freeze it. You can't put it. Sometimes, well, as I say, the Mark IVs, it penetrates the Mark IV that rat range, because they're really very far. But a Tiger tanker, it's just burst off. So it's burst off.
Would they have them by then? They wouldn't have them by
then. No.
So these would be Mark IVs and threes as well. And what would happen when you hit a tank, a German tank? What could you see happen?
The first thing you see happen is it would stop, and then you hit it, the turret, and what you see then was most of them just bailing out. Something went fire. If you mean if you shot them through there and hit them in the paper tire, was it? But they, once you get them by the heart, is when they can bail out the turret. Some came out bailing out the top, some didn't come out at all the front. You know, they'd be killed.
And did they catch fire?
What
could you see when a tank caught fire like that?
Oh, you see the smoke. And fire, you mean see free, but if you hit them in the back of the engine, you see fire straight away. Most of them, the majority of times, they stop and they would bail out, I mean, they think, and then you just get fire out, they go fire out.
Were you within machine gun range? I mean, would you machine gun or fire at the crews once they were out?
Yes, yeah, you would. You fired at anything that moved at all.
So there was it wasn't a gentlemanly war.
No.
If the crew came out, you still shot them up.
Yeah.
And how many would you hit? I mean, you know, give us an idea. I mean, how many tanks would your tank hit? Just to give us an idea.
Well, I'm sure we had three at the end, anyway. Three. I mean, my tank, like, you know, and others.
And what about return fire?
Well, we've got 9 fire back of us.
And no supporting German artillery at all?
The artillery fired before the tanks came up. I know, but there wasn't anywhere near us. We were firing for the back, but over the heads, you know.
How did it feel, dishing it out like that?
Us dishing it out?
Well, yeah.
Well, I felt it was great, because we went through the same thing at Night's Ridge, the very same thing. We had no idea the Indian news were done. I mean, actually, we didn't see anything. We just go to the top of the hill and they were just waiting to ask for one.
So you don't even know if it was 88mm to do it?
Well, we told afterwards that the British general, which had been told that Dakar had been things were done, but we had all sorts of deal, but they were definitely 88mm to help us.
So you felt there was a revenge feeling?
Yes, it was, yeah. Because we were just been suffering defeat. Did that? But then I joined the war. Actually, it was Night Raid and we were hammered. It was slaughtered. This was our first raid. Well, these raids on the restaurants were nothing really compared to what they inflicted us.
Did it worry you, just the killing side of it? I mean, you know, I mean, that you were responsible for killing people, or was that something that didn't come to your mind then?
At that time, no. Only that. Because I had an experience once away from here that in France.
I'll come back to that, but at that time you didn't think about it.
No, not at all.
It was just.
Yep. Funny how, because we really correct murder, but we didn't think this murder, you think this is your job, you think. And anything that moved at all, moved, you shot.